today we have Ali Alberigo, who is going to be talking about the art of fighting without fighting in your schools. Ali's been practicing martial arts for over 41 years, and he's been a professional full-time instructor and owner of Long Island Ninjutsu Centers in Long Island, New York, for over 30 years. Ali owns three schools and three branches located in New York, Bermuda, and Virginia, and his schools currently gross in excess of $1 million a year. Not only is Ali a traditionalist who practices classical Japanese ninjutsu, did I pronounce that correctly?
Ninjutsu.
But he's also one of Member Solutions' senior consultants, as well as the owner of Taking It to the Next Level. His program, Taking It to the Next Level, was created to have a step-by-step process in your schools so that you can follow it from point A to point B based on what he's done to grow his schools. It's been a very successful program. It's done a lot for our Member Solutions clients. And it's a great online program without having to do big changes in your school as far as licensing or changing the name of your school. It's a great program to follow whatever business you're in, whether you're a new school starting out or whether you've been in business for 10 to 15 years. The Taking It to the Next Level program can help your school grow whatever size you are at. Ali's been doing a lot of teleseminars for us and has been helping our clients throughout the years, and we greatly appreciate that. He hasn't done a teleseminar in a while, so we're excited to listen to this one. It'll be on the art of fighting without fighting, and I will roll it over to Ali, and I will ask the questions that are online once you get into it.
Okay, great. Well, thanks, Angela. That was a great introduction. I appreciate it very much. And if anybody at the end has questions on Next Level, I'll explain that. But basically, I wanted to say hello and welcome everyone to this teleseminar called The Art of Fighting Without Fighting. And for those of you who know this saying, you probably remember the movie Enter the Dragon, starring the late and great Bruce Lee. I remember this movie so well. In fact, I memorized pretty much every single line in the movie and still remember them some 30 years later. The scene is a great representation of what we go through on a regular basis running a business, dealing with students and parents and suppliers day in and day out, and seeing how they can go from being our biggest fans to, for lack of better words, our worst enemies or our biggest adversaries. Although in our industry, there's a saying that's out there today by many consultants that say that the martial art business is not rocket science. When they describe our business, I beg to differ. And I say that it may not be rocket science, obviously, because we're not building a rocket, but it most certainly is not an easy business to run, because it's not a black and white business. So for those of you out there who are struggling day in and day out just to keep all the cogs in the wheel and make your business profitable and professional, and you feel like, you know, people are, or you hear or you read that people are out there saying this should be easy, rest assured it's not. So you know that all the difficulties that you go through on a day-to-day basis is common, but at the same time, it's not like that old saying, common sense is not so common, right? So we have to learn that our business of the martial arts is a very intricate business, and it's something that we need to learn how to run properly. In other words, we're black belts on the floor, but we also have to be black belts in business. Quite frankly, most school owners don't get the time to learn that black belt in business, and that's what I do when I teach people on my consulting program. But remember, going back to Bruce Lee, said, you know, the art of fighting without fighting. He was on the boat in the movie with John Saxton. John Saxton created this, you know, this adversarial kind of attitude, and basically what happened was he called Bruce Lee out. He called him out to say to him, you know, let's go fight, or let's fight right now. And Bruce Lee had said, let's go on that boat to that island, you know, and we'll fight there. And John Saxton took him up on it. And basically, jumped on the boat, and Bruce Lee let the boat go away, and he got rid of the fight without having to fight. Now, what does this have to do with business? Well, I'm going to go into that now with how we run a martial arts school and how can we turn our worst nightmares into raving fans. Now, first I want to clarify that if I had a coffee shop and I owned a coffee shop / restaurant diner that served breakfast, lunch, and dinner, I would have about three types of major players in making my business work. First, I'd need to have a good cook. Of course, this is a top priority, just like in the martial arts, is to have a great instructor. Unfortunately, in some schools, we don't have a great curriculum, and the instructor isn't as dynamic as they should be, so they won't have a flourishing, growing school because their personality or lack of education on how to become a better person or actor or better presenter is not there. So remember, if we have a good cook, we have a good product, we can get people to enjoy our food in our restaurant. We're going to have that part done. The second, I think, is to have a good concierge, or in the martial arts, the same a comparison would be a program manager, or what you might call a program director. The third is to have good servers, waiters and waitresses, which is compared to what we consider our assistant instructors. The last few that are behind the scenes are management, which is bookkeeping and accounting. And if you have all these staff members or all these employees in place, if it were a restaurant business, it would flourish. If it were a martial art business, it should flourish as well. The only defining definition or difference that I find is that our business, the martial art business, is a personality-driven business. Basically, the owner is the personality, and sometimes when that owner is not there and you have staff members there, assistant instructors, the personality is taken out of the business. And way back when I did a teleseminar for Member Solutions called A Personality-Driven Curriculum, not a curriculum that's driven by a personality. And if you want more information on that, do not hesitate to email me, and I'll send you info on that. But anyway, many times throughout our career, we have clients who start off as raving fans, and then with the snap of a finger, they end up becoming our very own worst nightmare. And I want to define to you what it takes to have a client go from good to worse, or from great to hating you. From great to hate, right? So let me identify first 10 major key factors that take a client from fan to critic. Number one, not getting what is promised. If you promise something and you do not live up to your expectations or this client's expectations, 100% they're going to end up not liking you. Number two, not understanding what's expected of them. This is their issue. The client does not understand what's expected of them to achieve the desired results that they expect from you. Let me repeat that. The client doesn't understand what's expected of them in order to achieve the results that they expect from you. I'll explain this in a little bit more detail later on. Number three, the client is not able to express their desire, or they don't want to express or go out of their way to tell you how they feel. They would just rather or just become disgruntled. Number four, you might have someone in the lobby who is the voice, and they're out there complaining. So clients that are out there listening are hearing others complain, basically having an environment that's not conducive to productive outcome. Number five, you need to understand that the client's goals are changing on a regular basis, day to day. If you're not updating them, you're going to lose that client. Number six, not clearly getting people to understand their potential and the struggles that are in front of them. Basically, I wrote an article for Member Solutions in the archives, I think, still called Opening a Can of Worms. Basically, putting everything on the table and letting people know that it's not going to be all roses. Every client will have a struggle. Every person, every student will want to quit. Every parent will have something at some point that they're not 100% happy that you're doing. It's just impossible. You know, that's why people, what happens is they pick a flavor of ice cream that they love, and they eat that flavor over and over and over again until they get sick of it, and then they never eat it again. It's a very similar analogy in the martial arts. Number seven, you don't toot your own horn enough. As an owner, pointing out the differences and benefits of your school or your organization, as well as your business and the style or martial art you teach, you need to be able to let people know why you're the best. Number nine, not clearly explaining the client's responsibility and what their role is in that responsibility and what you will tolerate and won't tolerate. 10, last but not least, superior service and the explanation as to why you give it. Now, in most small businesses, they have not put enough time into setting up rules for their business. You may say to yourself, I have rules within my school. Most of the time, the rules that people talk about within their school has more to do with the conduct, how to wear and wash your uniform, how to wear your belt, how to bow in class, how to address your instructor, what to do and what not to do during a class to be respectful, et cetera, et cetera. Although this is essential, I'm not talking about those type of rules. I'm talking about setting up rules that are basically a customer service protocol. Make note of that word, customer service protocol. Write that down if you can. What is it that you want your school to represent in regards to customer service? Do you believe that every person who walks through the door should be greeted with a smile and a friendly hello? When I traveled to Japan, most of the stores, the 7-Elevens, the local, delicatessen, so to speak, are there. And when you walk through the door, you're greeted with a big, loud, "Itashaimase." They yell out, "Welcome." This is loudly yelled out to every new client that walks through the door, no matter what that person, that salesperson, is doing at that moment in time. They could be ringing up a sale in the middle of a conversation. Someone walks through the door, and they yell out, "Itashaimase. Welcome." This type of policy is something that you as a school owner can implement in your school, although you might not want to yell out in Japanese, but you most certainly can make it part of what I would consider a great step of the 10 steps to customer service protocol. Write that down, 10 steps to customer service protocol. What do you want to become your 10 steps? When you start to develop your steps within your school, you must take into consideration all the factors that go into the customer service portion of your business. Let's go back to my 10 major key factors of why people become disgruntled. And let's turn it around, turn that frown upside down, so to speak, and basically take that service and all the problems and put in a system to make sure that those problems never occur, or if they do, you take care of them right away. Now, remember, I'm doing this service with the customers, I'm doing this seminar with the customer service mentality that all clients are 100% correct. You know, you've heard that saying in retail where they say the client is always right. Even though when we know in our head sometimes the client is wrong, we should take the approach that the client is always right, but we know that sometimes there are some clients that you can never make happy. And I'll talk later about how enough is enough and when you could make the decision to fire clients. But anyway, going back to number one, remember what I said, not getting what is promised. If a client is told that you're going to do something, no matter how big or how small it is, you never assume that it's okay not to deliver, even if they forgot about it or you think they forgot about it. Even if you go back on a promise, they'll remember it forever. It's okay if a plan changes or because they do all the time. Just remember, if they do, you must tell the client or work with them to make sure they're understanding the reasons behind and the changes that are going to take place. Remember, there's only one time to make a first impression, but there are a million times to make a lasting impression or destroy your first impression. One of my favorite quotes is familiarity breeds contempt. Meaning, basically, that the more people get used to you, the more they tend to take you for granted. I don't want to harp on this too long, but you really need to understand and think about this one, because what people think today is unbelievable quality customer service in 3 months will only become normal basic service if you're doing your job on a daily basis. This is how people turn from being biggest fans or the raving fans into your adversaries. Simply, sometimes it has to do with them becoming complacent, and what they saw as being unbelievable becomes routine. So my suggestion is to always reset your goals and toot your own horn, reminding people of why they're there to begin with and why they're getting the best service ever. Number two, not understanding what's expected of them. The client doesn't understand what's expected of them in order to achieve the desired results. This is rampant throughout our society. Just look at T-ball, or look at, let's forget baseball, let's look at the public school systems. If a teacher is not the greatest teacher in the world and the child fails, most of the time parents will blame the teacher. And, you know, quite frankly, sometimes the teacher does basically stink. But we can't blame the teacher for our children being stupid. If, for instance, my daughter, had a bad teacher, and I just accepted the fact that the teacher was terrible and allowed my daughter to be part of that training system and not getting the benefits, I'm basically hurting my child. So I need to go out and make sure that I help her and educate her. Because we have a deficiency in the teaching ability, I have to be the one to step up and take over. This doesn't happen all that often within our schools. You have to become the person who recognizes the fact that it's always and inevitably your own responsibility for your life and for your child's. So how do we get students and parents to understand that? We have to make sure that their understanding of what they understand what's expected of them and what they need to do to achieve the desired results. I once read about Chuck Norris in a book way back when that said, and he said it, that he was not the most talented of people. He had to always work hard. And I identified with him on this because I personally never had anything come easy to me. I was a guitar player. I was a singer in a rock and roll band. And I needed to work to get good. It wasn't that it ever came natural. When I began martial arts as a little kid, everything, I had to work twice or three times as hard as someone else because maybe I wasn't as coordinated or maybe I didn't pick up that quickly or whatever the reason may be. But I realized as a young child that I needed to work harder, and my parents never let me forget that it was never an excuse where I could say, oh, it's the teacher's fault, he stinks, and I'll just accept the fact that I'm going to stink as well. My parents always reminded me that I had to put in the extra effort. So we have to educate our clients. We want our students to be amazing, and we want them to understand that the parents, the students, and the school and the staff are all on one team. We all have the same goal, and that's to produce amazing students. It's not something we as school owners take lightly, or at least I can say in my schools, I don't. We want our students to be amazing, but I can't take them out of their own body and replace my drive and goals and desire for them to have black belt excellence just because I want it. They have to want it. But parents need to know their responsibility of what it takes to get that child over a hump. If they're not doing well at testing, they need to practice more. It's not what they think where they drop down $120 or $140 in tuition and their responsibility is free. Now we take over. They have to be a part of the team. I hope that makes sense. It's just like a business relationship is just like a marriage. Once either one of the parties checks out mentally, the inevitable will follow and the relationship is doomed. Remember this. I'll say that again. Once anyone in the relationship checks out mentally, then the inevitable will follow and the relationship is doomed. There's nothing different with the student than there is with a relationship. Once the parent has checked out and they're not pushing the kid anymore or they're not engaged because they don't realize the benefits or the benefits have disappeared because they've already achieved that result, then they're going to check out. And we say in our school, you could quote me on this, is that behind every demotivated child or student, you know, young kid is a demotivated parent. So in other words, if that kid is going to quit, that's because we stopped communicating with the parent, reminding them of why they can't allow their kid to quit. If I had a dollar or 50 cents or even a dime for every person that says, I don't want to force my kid, I'd be a millionaire by now. I don't want to force my kid to go if he doesn't want to go. I don't want to make my kid to go if he doesn't want to go. All, in my opinion, ridiculous. But anyway, this is important for us to make sure that they understand, the clients and the parents or the adult student understands that they understand what's expected of them in order for them to achieve greatness. That's important to communicate that. Number three, not being able to express the desire or wanting to and or the, from the client not being able to express the desire or even wanting to make the effort and just becoming disgruntled. In other words, it takes more to step up and tell someone how you feel than it is just to get pissed off and end up quitting. I've had people in my school that have quitted and end up hating me, only to realize later on that it was silly and, you know, come back to me and tell me that, yeah, you know, I didn't get my yellow belt. I was really, really annoyed. I felt that you did this and you did that, realizing that you were just teaching me how to become a better person. Anyway, we need to teach our clients how to communicate and understand what we expect or what's expected of them, so that they understand what they should be talking about and working on. Let me go a little bit deeper on that. You must become a master, too, of picking up the warning signs of when someone's unhappy. Most of the time, you might feel in the pit of your stomach that you could tell something is wrong. Just just like recently how the man in you know, Times Square discovered that smoking van filled with explosions, he detected a problem and acted on it. The only difference between him and others is that he was the only person or that I know of that actually acted on it. Most of the time, people see warning signs as business owners or me as a school owner. I see Johnny's attendance going down, or I see or detect the sarcasm in Mrs. Smith's voice, or, you know, they say, yeah, he's getting demotivated, or I'm not really happy, or you hear them talking to each other. We need to recognize those warning signs and detect that sarcasm in someone's voice or feel the feeling of their unhappiness and make a mental note of it. But most of the time, we make a mental note of it and then we put it and file it away and never follow up on it. The key to keeping raving fans is to have a system in place to get people over the blues or through their issues, and we need to make sure that we talk about it and solve the problem, or at minimum, work towards a solution. The goal to finding out what's going on within a client's head is to have continual parent-teacher or sensei-student meetings and goal-setting appointments. Remember that a parent that may have signed up their child at 4 years old that's been training with you for 2 years had started because he had no self-confidence. Well, if we do our job and they become confident young kids, that parent no longer has that concern. And in their mind, they're thinking, been there, done that, that's over with. Johnny now has a problem with flexibility. We need to reset our goals. Yes, it's not bad for us to continually remind people, in my opinion, of what we've done correctly. Because if we don't continually remind people of our job that we're doing, they're going to easily forget. And like I said in the beginning, they're going to just become complacent or, you know, familiar, and they're not going to remember at why we're the best we are at what we do. So if we reestablish new goals, we'll always keep that student around, or we will keep them for a more period of time or a longer haul than normal, because we're always resetting goals, showing the parents what we're working on, ticking it off our list, and moving forward. Same with adults, no different. An adult might be shy. We help them through that. Now they want to lose weight. We help them through that. Now they're confident. We help them through that. We have to continually reset goals that they want to set, not only goals for ourselves, but for, you know, for them, you know, as well. Number four, we talked about hearing others complain, having an environment that's not conducive or productive to our clientele, our student body, to our lobbying. We need to realize that we need to nip this in the bud. We must first identify, and this analogy is great, like Dr. House has to identify the disease, you know, on that TV show, and then either cure it or remove it, either by fixing the problem, by taking that person face-to-face, sitting them down in your office and saying, what is the deal? Why are you so unhappy? What can I do to make you a raving fan? If I did steps 1, 2, and 3, would that work, and would you stop complaining? Would you stop being unhappy? Or if in the case where there are many people like this, they basically walk around with that proverbial black cloud above their heads. I had a friend, he's a martial artist, and we used to travel a lot together, and he always had this black cloud. One time we were in line to get our tickets at the airport to go on board the plane, and he just had that frown and that attitude that he always walked around with, and the lady said to him at the checkout line where we're checking in our bags, she said, are you going to check that black cloud with you as well? And I laughed hysterical. He didn't even have a clue, and this lady never met this guy. So I think that it's important for us to take those people, and sometimes if we can't correct the problem, not feel funny about firing them, getting rid of them. Because you know what? If they're creating havoc and you see it, everyone else is noticing it and they're starting to turn as well. So you got to get that disease and cut it out and get rid of it. Now, goals changing and not being updated is a big key factor to customer service. I talked about it a little bit before. So we need to have regular meetings to get those goals on par and make sure that we update them and adapt with the student as they're growing mentally, physically, and martial art ability. Six, we said not clearly getting people to understand their potential and the struggles that are in front of them. Imagine this. Have you ever called a new client and said to them, I have, you know, I was wondering how Johnny's doing, and Mrs. Smith says to you, Johnny is doing great. This is the first activity they ever did, that they're waiting at the door. They're so, so happy. I'm so, so happy, only to find out 6 months later they quit. And you scratch your head to the point where you say, how could this possibly be? How could this possibly be that they just told me they loved it, and 6 months later they're quitting? Well, basically, that's because we had not really taught the student or the client or the parent that the potential is there, and these are the struggles that they're going to go through. We know, Mrs. Smith, that Johnny's loving it right now, but in 6 months, he may want to quit, and this is what you need to do. And we also need to have some sort of verbal contract with a parent saying, if you run into these struggles, are you going to stick with it? Have you ever heard, and I know I do yearly agreements, and most of the majority of Member Solutions clients do, but I've had parents say, oh, no, no, the Rodriguez family aren't quitters. We tell our son that he has to just finish. Once he's done with this year program, he's okay. And then isn't that quitting, in my opinion? Is quitting only short period? Let's use the marriage analogy. That same parent would say, none of us ever get divorced in the Rodriguez family. As long as they do that year, then they've done their year, and then they could get out. Well, that's quitting, in my opinion. So what we have to understand and establish with our clients is that this is not a short-term kind of activity. The only way you will benefit from the martial arts is if you stick with it for a long period of time and it becomes who you are, not what you do. Another one of my quotes that I love to use, the martial arts is not what you do, but who you are. By doing it on a regular basis and believing it, it shapes your life, then all of a sudden it becomes who you are. And then you don't do the martial arts, you live the martial arts. Every single thing you do in life becomes the martial arts. That's my personal philosophy. The way we deal with relationships, the way we run our business, the way that we conduct our personal lives, the way that we eat, drink, sleep, and breathe becomes martial arts. That's why most people in the industry right now are confused, because they're doing the martial arts or they're teaching their students to do it. They're not living it. And this is where the old antiquated martial arts, that the samurai master would take out his son and they'd walk through the garden and he'd say that he's teaching his kid about flowers, or they would fold paper and he's teaching him the art of paper arranging, or he's painting sumi-e and he's not just painting, he's teaching his child how to become an artist. That's what the difference between traditional martial arts and just doing is. Anyway, going back to number six, you have to clearly get your people to understand their potential and what the struggles are that are in front of them. Seven, you clearly have to educate your clients and give them the tools to achieve excellence. This goes for the parents as well. Mrs. Smith, if Johnny wants to quit, I know he loves it right now, but if he wants to quit, this is what I suggest, steps 1, 2, 3, and 4. And if you do these things, while you're doing them, make sure I'm aware so my staff can help and blah, blah, blah. You have to have tools in place. Just like we teach our students self-defense, we don't say to them, okay, bam, you got hit in the face, now block. We show them the block first, and then we say, if the punch comes, this is how you move your arm, and this is how you move out of the way, et cetera, et cetera. And we prepare them to defend themselves. Well, why not prepare your clients to defend themselves against things like burnout? Prepare the parent against things like bad words like, I want to quit, or I'm bored, or I don't want to go anymore, or I didn't get my belt. If I lose another student over the next 5 years, which I will, lose hundreds, I'm sure, because they didn't get what they wanted. It's like spoiled children in a candy store, and parents go, well, he's demotivated, he didn't get his belt. Well, so what? Well, he's playing baseball, he didn't get a home run, he didn't make he didn't hit the ball, he didn't catch the ball, so quit, quit, quit. What are we teaching our people is to eventually grow up to be paper tigers, and eventually, until they find something that they're good at, which most people don't because they don't put enough time and effort into it, then what happens is they end up quitting everything in life, and they just cycle from the one phase to the next to the next. It's what I find to be rampant in the martial art industry, where I find that every single year there's a new focus on something that we could do differently. Why not just take basic business principles and run our business with a solid foundation? And if we have a solid foundation and the principles are there, the business will continue to grow. Think about this. Has Coca-Cola changed their brand in over 60 years? No. Why are they still selling? Yeah, they market differently. Yeah, they use hip-hop music when they used to use 80s metal music, or they use this. Now they have Gene Simmons on there from Kiss, and that marketing end changes, but the product is still the same. Why do we have to go from cardio karate to some other fitness program to a self-defense program to an MMA program? I'm not saying to change with the times, but what I am saying is stop throwing away your identity on a regular basis. That's my biggest qualm with the industry right now, where every new turn, every new idea is, hey, guys, let's do this. I just wrote an article that was blogged on Member Solutions blog, and basically people was for get 20 tips to new students. Well, it's no different than I gave out 10 years ago. It's really the same. Yes, the economy has changed, so we slightly alter our marketing. Yes, our sales approach might change a little, but how do we get out and get students? It's no different than it used to be. You know, yeah, we're introducing some internet stuff and other things, but you know what? Let's stay with the foundation and the basic principles, and we're all going to grow. So basically, we need to make sure we explain to our clients and educate them and give them the tools to achieve excellence. And number eight, we have to toot our own horn on a regular basis. We have to explain to people why we're different, why our school offers more than the other guy down the road, or more than baseball or t-ball, or more than, you know, chess club. Why is it that our martial art is life-changing? People, if we don't tell them, who's going to tell them? We know that people won't research. We know that they're not going to look at stuff. We know that they're just going to do what they have in front of them until they get bored. So we have to continually, and I'm not saying to brag, but educate our clients as why our school is the best thing for them. And if we continually do that and remind people, it's going to keep them engaged longer. And the last two is, one, not clearly explaining the client's responsibility. That kind of goes hand in hand with, you know, number seven, clearly educating our clients. And 10, last but not least, superior service and the explanation of why. What do I mean by that? Is we have service. We have 10 steps to quality service. We have to understand in our own heads and also explain to our clients at why these service processes are in place. It's essential for us to make sure that we have and put into effect, let's say, the 10 steps to customer service within our school. Number one, greet all clients when they come through the door with a happy smile and you know, hi, Mrs. Smith. Number two, and I'm just pulling these out of the top of my head right now, make sure that you walk all parents to the sitting area. Number three, make sure you update them on the progresses. Also, too, what do we do, and I suggest after you have 10 steps to customer service, to have 5 steps to quality service and dealing with disgruntled employees. Or let's just pretend, let's look at a student who hasn't attended in a while. I usually ask people, do we miss you calls? And people say yes. I go, do you do a we miss you card if they don't return your call? They say yes. And I say, what are your 5 steps that you're going to use for customer service? In other words, someone hasn't shown up to class in 3 weeks. We send them a postcard and we make a phone call. The next week we send out a letter, a motivational letter. The third step we do, we stop by their house. The fourth step is we send them balloons with a flower, you know, telling them that we miss them. And quite often when relationships fold, we get sad. You know, whatever you want to do, but what are the 5 steps of follow through and what are the time signatures in which you're going to do it? Right? And I think that this is essential for us because if we're not doing that, it quite frankly gets lost and we say, okay, we put effort forward. We think we put up effort when really we haven't put in much effort at all. What is it that we do for a student who quit? Do we just call them a few times and if they ignore our phone calls, do we let it go? Or do we mail them a letter after a month and then another letter with maybe a discount after 2 months? Do we send them a musical telegram after 3 months? Do we send them an email after 4 months and have someone deliver, you know, chocolate to their house? I'm just giving you crazy ideas, but you should have 5 steps to people who have quit, 5 and what process you're going to do over the next 5 months or a year. You should have 10 steps to customer service within your school, 5 steps on how to deal with a disgruntled client. Let's say Mrs. Jones is unhappy, Johnny didn't get his belt. So what we're going to do is, number one, we're going to set up a free private lesson. Number two, we're going to do a meeting after that private lesson and do a review with the parent. Number three, we're going to make sure that that parent is happy and the student is progressing forward. If not, 4, we're going to set forward a plan of action over the next 2 to 3 weeks to achieve the goal of that parent and that client. Imagine if we put this effort into our schools, and I know some of you might be saying, holy crow, this is a lot of stuff to remember, but remember, every single thing that I get you to do better in this regard to the art of fighting and dealing with clients without fighting, basically not fighting with the person but achieving the same result and getting the customer to be happy again, is going to up your retention. Imagine if you're at 50% retention and it ups you to 25%. That's 25% less marketing than you have to do. Or if you keep your marketing machine running, that's 25% more students that you're going to retain on top of the new students that you sign up. People forget that retention is marketing. That is the key to a successful school. Every single thing we do internally to keep our school growing is what's going to keep our schools, profitable. And I have a three-step system that I love to teach my elite coaching clients that I work with on a weekly basis. Number one, we say high quality. Number two, low stress. And number three, high profit. It's not like the old martial art calculator that says you want to make more money, add on more students. That's why the biggest question asked to me in the industry today is, how do I get more students? It should be, how do I make more profit and have better quality? People don't ask me that much. They always ask me, how do I get more people? Well, why do you want more people? Because, you know, I got 10 in and I lost 20. Well, that's because your customer service and your quality isn't there. That's why we need to turn our clients into raving fans. Anyway, I've just spoken for 39 minutes nonstop, so I'm going to ask Angela to open up for some questions, and then I will close after the questions, if you have any, with when is the right time to fire someone, fire clients, not only employees, but clients. So, Angela, can we open up the lines?
Yes, I have opened up the lines, so if anybody has any questions that you'd like to ask, go ahead.
Is there anyone online, on the phone, you know, live, that would like to ask me a question? None. Okay. I used to get upset about that, but I do realize that because I explained myself pretty well, and then basically I've just kind of beaten everyone into submission where they just try to hear my voice. But anyway, okay, so no other
online questions for you, though.
Okay, yeah.
So maybe on the phone have been putting in online questions.
Okay.
Okay, I have three of them. I'm going to first ask the question from Karen from Reading, Pennsylvania. She asks, what do you do with clients who stop coming, stop paying, and refuse to honor their contract?
Well, I'm kind of like the black sheep in the industry. I am a big stickler for making sure that people live up to their agreement. Now, I'm not sure in Reading, Pennsylvania, as to what the laws are as far as contract enforceability, but in my school, we basically will gather tons of contracts of people who stop coming and just decide that they can break their legally binding contract and just ignore it. Well, what we'll do is gather those together in blocks of like 10 or 15. I send them out to my attorney. My attorney writes a demand letter, and which you could get a demand letter online, or if you have an attorney on retainer, which I sometimes suggest is good to do, like paying an attorney $50 a month every single month, whether you need them or not, so that you have them on file. Then I actually send out a demand letter, and if they do not follow up and follow through on any response on the demand letter, I take them to small claims court. And I have a lot of people that have gotten judgments against them, probably in the tune of maybe $100,000 in people that owe me money on judgment. And then I just let it sit there and wait for collection. So I think that everything is important for us to do a follow-up and follow-through and to get tough with those people. I mean, after all, if you're not going to, why bother even having contracts? There's no sense to it. And I think that that's essential for us, again, to build rules and say, personally, what are your business rules? If someone doesn't pay, rule number one is send them out a demand letter. Rule number two is to, contact your attorney. Rule number three is to take them to small claims court. Those will be your rules. And you have to live by those rules. If not, people will continuously take advantage. That's just my opinion. I've had others say, no, don't do that, because if you upset them, they'll tell 8 other people, blah, blah, blah. What are they going to tell people? They're mad at you because they broke their agreement? Yeah, they'll probably badmouth you, but you know what? They're badmouthing you anyway because they're not showing up to your school and they're not paying you. What's the sense of a contract? Why is it legally binding? You know, people don't get that. You don't, you know, it used to be people have their word and they'd live up to responsibilities, but nowadays they don't bother. Okay, so that's my answer to that.
Okay, great. Now I have one from Jennifer from Gilbert, Arizona, and she asks, when you have fired a client, should you ever consider allowing them to return to the school? If so, when?
My suggestion is no. And why would you fire him in the first place if you might reconsider getting him back in? You know, I think that if you're at the point where you have to kick them out of your school and fire them, it's because they're not the right person for your school. It's like this. I once read this analogy. You know, it's like a bushel of apples, and you take one bad apple and you lay it on top of the bushel, and that apple rots away, and the juices from the apple go on the other apple. Sooner or later, within a small amount of time, you have a whole entire bushel of apples that are rotted. At some point, you might say clean that apple off and put it back and clean that apple off and put it back, but if it starts rotting the other apples, you have to get rid of it. Those people normally never change. So to me, when I get rid of a parent, I'm at my point where I can't stand that person. I try everything that I can to fix the problem. I give them opportunity. I bend over backwards to make them happy. And when I see that they're not happy, I just don't want them around me anymore. Why walk into your business and see a face of somebody that you can't stand because they make your life miserable rather than seeing 100 happy faces that just make your life blissful? So my suggestion is to never, ever take them back. I'm not saying that, people can't change or whatever, but why bother? You know, move forward onto more positive people. I've had some clients of mine that no matter what you did, there was a speck on the floor, there was a little bit of dirt, there was a spider web in the corner. Whatever they could find to complain about, they would, even if they were happy and everything. And I had one or two of them just recently that I kicked out of my school that the parent always claimed to be the most happiest parent ever. In fact, she would refer us people, and then when those people she referred joined the school, she'd complain to them about my school. And some of them would go, I don't understand. She referred us, got us to join, talked about how great you were, and then we got here, she did nothing but complain. I think that was just their personality, and I didn't want them around anymore. I actually ended up getting to the point where I almost would get angry when I saw them. So I didn't want to walk into my own building and be angry. So that my suggestion is, once they're gone, move on and get rid of them. So that's it.
All right. I have one more here. It's from Candace in Tampa, Florida. And she asks, how do you not take it personally when a member is constantly complaining and not seeing any good?
Well, I don't know that you should not take it personally. I think that you should take it personally because, like I said, that's the same thing that I just talked about where, listen, the martial arts, our martial arts school or your style is like your baby, right? And everything that we do, people don't see. I know as an owner, I'm at my school from 9:30 in the morning, behind the scenes, no one sees my face. I walk out of my front office to the back where my parents are, and I've already spent 7 hours. And then I go, hey, everybody, great to see you. And Mrs. Jones comes up and goes, I have a bone to pick with you. My little 3-year-old didn't get his stripe on time. And I say to myself, are you serious? Like, is that possible? And then if they're bickering and complaining, it's almost as if how much could you take when someone said, like I said, the martial arts is like your baby, if they just critique and criticize and criticize and criticize. If they started talking badly about your child, you wouldn't take much of it. So if they're continually saying bad things, first I want to suggest to you is to listen with an open mind. Maybe what they are saying has some validity. But if no matter what you do, is there to help them and you're doing everything that you possibly can to change or fix or correct, then you know what, then I say just, get rid of them and don't worry about them. And if you do take it personally, get rid of them. This is the great thing is that the martial art dojo is your own little private little country. It's your school. It's your rules. It's your philosophy. Of course, don't be a tyrant and be one of those people who don't listen to anything. Be open to suggestions. Open to critique and open to growing and changing. But if someone, no matter what you do, they just complain, complain, complain. I'll tell you an example. I had a woman who used to come to my East Islip location. We have beautiful chairs and tables in the lobby. And this woman would sit down on the floor with her legs stretched across the hallway that no matter whether it was a parent, a kid, whoever, had to go to the end of the hall, had to walk over her legs. She wouldn't even unfold her legs and let people pass. She just thought that she ran the show. And I would say to her, Mrs. So-and-so, I forget her name, please could you sit in one of the chairs? It looks terrible. It's going to create others to sit anywhere they want. Plus, people feel uncomfortable asking you to move or stepping over you. And she'd say, ha, 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 and she'd laugh and smile and maybe move her legs a little and go right back to her position. And after a few days of this, I said to her, you're not going to listen to me, are you? And she says, no. And I said, that's okay. I said, I want you to try to get up and go in those chairs, but you refuse, right? And she says, yeah, pretty much. And I said, okay, that's great. I walked into the office. I took our contract out of our folder. I ripped it up into a bunch of pieces, stuck it in an envelope. I said, here you go. And she said, what is this? And I walked back on the floor. And my program manager says, you're no longer allowed in this school. He's asked you a number of times. This is his school, and you're totally disrespectful by what you're doing. He no longer wants you or your 3 children around anymore. And I kicked her out of the school. point blank, that's it, done and over with. So basically that's my answer to that. I don't think that you have to tolerate it, and I don't think that, you know, you need to allow people to constantly say negative things. Okay, that's my answer on that one as well.
All right.
Any others? Any other questions online now that I got you guys going with questions, or no?
I have a question.
Sure.
My question is, we had 26 children training with us, and there are new children joining, but we've lost a lot of children, and my guess is they're only training once a week instead of twice or three times a week, so it's hard for them to feel their progress. And the parents came to the culminating event and watched their children, and I think they feel, wow, our kids have been here for all these months and don't seem to be getting any better, so they haven't come back to re-register. But I'm just wondering what to do, because the numbers have not been going up, because as new children are joining, a lot of children haven't been coming back, and I wondered what you suggest in terms of contacting.
Well, hi, sir, how are you? I recognize your voice, and I'm happy to have you on the line with me. I think we have to go back to that number, let me look what it was, number six or whatever, is making sure that people understand their responsibility. And then once we establish that, we have to determine whether those people are willing to step up and live up to what's needed for them to become great. Because in other words, in your school, they're not coming regularly, so they don't see any progress. Then they see others progress, so they feel demotivated and they end up quitting. And that's because early on we didn't show them that they need to do 2 days a week minimum in order to see some progress. Or at minimum, explain to them that if they're doing 1 day a week, they're going to progress a lot slower. Not to get discouraged, it's okay. It's just basically the longer program that they're going to have to be on in order to achieve the results of that kid who comes twice a week or three times a week and so on. So I think it's sitting down with that client and establishing with them why we suggest more than 1 week. This is a perfect analogy, and you can use this as an example when telling those parents. It's like this. If you did guitar lessons and you went to the lesson and put your guitar back in its case and never took it out until the next lesson, nothing is ever going to change. You're going to stay at best a crappy guitar player forever, and maybe just being able to hold one or two chords because you never put any time and effort into it. So if they're coming to your martial arts school only once and not practicing at home or not working on their moves, then they're not going to progress. And what's going to happen is they become demotivated. In my logo for my school, I have, it says Long Island Ninjutsu Centers, and the logo has the centers with a heart monitor. And it goes up, it goes down, it goes up, it goes down, and that's the way people will train. But once they flatlined, they're going to quit. So in my school, the last 25 people who've quit, they've all been red flagged, meaning that we look at their attendance and we notice they're not coming regularly. We put a little red flag on their card. That lets us know that they're in danger. We have a choice to resurrect them by sitting and reestablishing goals, or rejuvenate them by talking to them and motivating them in class and getting them to come more. If they come more and they start experiencing progresses, they're not going to want to quit. But if they're only coming here and there and not showing up, they're eventually on their way out. That's the warning sign. They're telling you that it's over, basically. Right. Remember when I said people mentally check out? That 1 day a week program is destined for mental checkout. Does that help you with your question?
It certainly does. Just to talk with them when they start to come in, and the 1 day a week is have a conversation with them and check in with them and encourage them to try the twice a week and to join.
Yes.
So,
and remember when you and I had spoken recently about the 2, 4, 6, 8, 10 week calls, how essential those are? Because in the initial sign up, when someone joins, we call them at the 2 week, at the 4 week, at the 6 week point. And what we do is at that point, we're basically helping them to understand the rules of our school. We're helping them to understand that we have, we basically have our set processes, and we're educating them, basically letting them know that this is what is going to happen, this is what we expect, and over that 8 week period of time, hopefully we've established some really good lines of communication.
Great.
So that's key. Yeah. Great. Well, that's an awesome question. Any others of anybody online with a question? No? Okay, Andrew, do we have
another one that's been entered in online?
Okay, I'm ready.
It is from Alan in Vancouver, and he asks, what would you do if a client threatened you to come back with a sign against your school and marched in front of your school?
I would threaten them back and beat the crap out of them. I'm just kidding. Well, I'm not really quite 100% kidding, but you know what, though? What are they complaining about, really? I mean, people will do all sorts of threats. I'll give you an example. I have a guy that shot a video for me recently. Again, understanding the warning signs, the red flags. After our video shoot, the guy came to me and he asked for money. And I said, okay, I'll give you a deposit. And he said, okay, no, I want to be paid in full. I said, I told you I wasn't going to pay you in full. He says, yeah, I know, but you got to do me a favor. Pay me in full. I really need the money. And against all my better judgment, I paid him in full. Now he does the video, and after he's all done with the video, he promised me it in 2 weeks. It took him 3 months to get it done. I finally got annoyed at him. I said, I want my video by this Thursday. And he said he finished the video, and he goes, I want $1,000 more for the video because it took me more time than it should have. I said, okay, you're not getting that much money. Anyway, long story short, he went out and he started to kind of develop a campaign to bash me in public on YouTube, stating that, you know, and he took excerpts from my video when I was goofing around my students, and then he took my phone call that I yelled at him on the phone about getting my video. You know, nothing bad, just telling him, listen, this is unprofessional behavior, I'm not going to tolerate it, yada, yada, yada. And he made this video of me talking with my cell phone and me goofing with my students, and he's trying to bash me and scare me into, you know, letting him go. Anyway, long story short, I have my attorney on it right now. We have a defamation of character case going on, and I'm going to sue him. And I'm only going to sue him because he's pushed me to the limit where I can't tolerate it anymore. So now I'm going to do whatever I can to crush him, because that's just martial arts. You could sit back and take, and at some point you have to raise your hands and defend yourself. So for this gentleman with that question, I say, you know what? Try to let it go. Try to be nice. Try to ignore it. Eventually, they most probably are going to go away. The reason why they're mad is for some strange reason in their head, then they're going to try to, you know, to try to make your life miserable. Just ignore them and take a peaceful way. And then if that doesn't work, handle it legally. You know, I'm not saying to go out and beat them up. I'm saying call an attorney, call the police, whatever. But it's not something that you should really put as much effort into, because most of the time people just threaten. But also, on a side note, I would definitely think about why, like, what is the reason? Is there any legitimacy in why he's upset? Can you, even if it's just for the future, change or fix any of the situations that arise and make it better so it doesn't happen again? That's my answer on that. So definitely, you know, take the passive way at first, and if that doesn't work, then, you know, take legal action. Okay. Well, I think that's the last question there.
That is the last question.
Good. So I'm going to close up. I have about 4 minutes left, and I'm going to close up with basically talking about when do we fire our clients. You know, when is enough enough? I know I kind of talked about that throughout this call, but I think it's essential for us to realize that if someone is – and I'm going to use this as not a – I'll use an analogy of a student that may – let's say, for instance, you have a child that is a high-maintenance child. Whether they have ADD or autism or whatever the case may be, they need more of your time and effort. And let's say we put them in an inclusion environment where they're in a regular class, but all day long. And I've had kids that have no issues whatsoever that are always, AJ, don't do this. AJ, don't hit so hard. AJ, stop doing that. Stop talking. Sit up straight. AJ, stop being nasty. Stop picking your nose. Whatever the case may be. AJ, 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 while all the other kids are doing, 25 kids are doing their job, and they're respectful, and they're excited, and all the time I have to say, AJ, negative, AJ, negative, these kids get demotivated. One, some of the kids start to pick up on it. Two, the other kids start to get frustrated and not want to be there, because who wants to hear someone complaining about AJ all day long, right? So I have to think, what's in the best interest of my school? Not financially, but what's in the best interest of my students? Do I keep on saying AJ, AJ, AJ? Or do I get rid of AJ and maybe possibly if I want to put him in a special class, maybe do private lessons. And if it is a child with special needs, maybe do something nice on the side because they can't be in that inclusion environment. Or if it's a kid who's just trouble and the parents don't care to fix the situation, get rid of them and fix and work with your 25 positive kids. So we have to look at it from the potential that what is it doing to my school? What is that parent bickering in the lobby? What is that jerky guy who's going to threaten to walk around with a picket sign outside your school? Why even deal with someone like that? Get rid of them. Eventually they'll stop picketing because there's nothing for them to do. And then people who know you will see that person as a crazy person, guaranteed. And then you move on and you cleanse the school of negativity and you have nothing but positive people. I, over the last 3 or 4 years, had to go through a cycle where I had a bunch of negative black belt kids and parents. Well, the kids were good, but the parents were negative, and they were with me 7, 8, 9 years. Eventually, they had to go away, and now the environment in my school is nothing but positive, and that's what we're looking for. So basically, that's what I suggest to you, is to always look at the situation at whole and make a decision on based on whether the negativity is bringing the school down or the time and effort you're putting into those parents and get rid of them. So when do you fire? When enough is enough is because you have to understand that it's affecting your business overall and the other parents. That's a hard decision to make, but at the same time, when you think about it long enough, it's the right decision. It might be difficult to do, but it's definitely going to be the best for you. And that's the conclusion of my teleseminar today, and I'm happy to have been here. I also want to offer to every single person that's out there, if you email me today, I have some really great tips I'd like to give to you on customer service and building rules within your school. And if anyone is interested, I have my all you got to do is email me at Kyoshi, K-Y-O-S-H-I, at L-I-Ninja. That's L-I-N-I-N-J-A.com. That's K-Y-O-S-H-I, at L-I-N-I-N-J-A.com. Or you could go right to my site at takingittothenextlevel.com. And I also want to offer you today, if anyone joins my Taking It to the Next Level program, it's very inexpensive. It's a month-to-month program. Basically, it's set up in a way where I teach you a business education step by step. I'm not like all the other things that are out there where I just throw new ideas and new information at you on a regular basis. And like mad scientists in a laboratory, you guys have to sort through the madness. I sequentially give information out so that you could plug in one, plug in two, plug in three. In my analogy of the way I do consulting is like taking a puzzle and numbering every single one of the pieces and giving you directions and how to put it together versus most of the other consulting where they throw the pieces of the puzzle on the table and let you sort through the madness. You get a little corner here, a little piece there, a little part over here, and you never really get a good picture. With me, you're going to start upper left-hand corner, and you're going to slowly plug in all the pieces, and the picture just becomes clearer and clearer, and you build the systems within your school. I've had people, some of my clients that have quadrupled their income and their business in less than 2.5, 3 years on my program, went from $6,000 a month in billing to $30,000 a month in billing without adding on all that many clients. So if you're interested, my special offer to you today is if you join Taking It to the Next Level, I'll give you my book or a DVD. Or actually, you know what? I'll give you my book and DVD for free if you sign up for 1 month, and you can discontinue if you're not happy. And I guarantee you'll be happy just alone with the information on month one. But my book is worth $40. It's called Martial Art Business 101. And also any one of my DVDs, I'll give both of those to you for free if you join my Next Level program and give it a try. And that's my offer. So I hope you guys enjoyed it. Email me if you have any questions. And thank you, Angela, for being the moderator and having me on the call.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ollie.
For the seminar today. It was great.
My pleasure, guys. Thank you so much for being on with me, everyone, from all over the country. And I'll talk to you real soon.
Great. Thank you so much, Ollie.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.